small modular reactors. If you've got thoughts, we've got about 15 minutes left on Blue Sky. I'm Stephanie Langenegger in for Garth today. Our phone number is 1-800-716-2221 if you'd like to talk with us. Another critic who questions the viability of small modular reactors, as well as its clean energy branding, is Susan O'Donnell. She's an adjunct professor at both the University of New Brunswick and St. Thomas University, and she's with the Coalition for Responsible Energy Development. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Stephanie. Thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, thank you for making time for us. What do you think of Saskatchewan and your province looking at building a small nuclear reactor?
Well, you know, Stephanie, I have been a career researcher for more than 26 years, and for the last part of my technical career, I worked at the National Research Council before I retired. So my specialty, although I'm a social scientist, my specialty is technology adoption, and I've been looking at SMRs over the last 2 years. And I think one thing that a lot of your listeners might be interested in is that there's a huge leap between having a design for an SMR and then getting to the point of having an engineered design where you can actually apply for a license to build one. And the most advanced design in the U.S. is called NuScale for an SMR. And they've spent almost $1 billion on the engineered design, and they just got a license to build it. It hasn't been built yet. Just in the last couple of months in the U.S. And then it's another huge leap between building a prototype that might actually work in a laboratory to getting one that actually commercially works in the real world. And most technologies actually don't make it that far. And then if you do get one that actually works in a commercial setting, you have to be able to sell them to have any kind of economic development. And from all the research that I've read, Stephanie, it's very, very dubious that SMRs are going to have any economic impact in New Brunswick, and I would suggest in Saskatchewan as well.
Why then would four provinces be looking at them?
That's a great question. And unfortunately, I'd have to say that the decisions around SMRs at the federal level and certainly at the provincial level are political decisions rather than based on science. Because from what I've read, reading peer-reviewed science in three different countries, Canada, the U.S., and the U.K., it really doesn't make any economic sense. However, what we have happening here is a very, very powerful industry, the nuclear industry, that has a long history in Canada. And they have been lobbying like crazy to get these things off the ground. Because unfortunately, Stephanie, nuclear power hasn't been successful financially. In New Brunswick, for example, the nuclear power, we have one, the Point Lepreau reactor. It's been a financial disaster for the province. It's responsible for more than three quarters of NB Power, that's our utilities debt. It's put us $3.6 billion in debt, and we have only 800,000 people. I heard your previous speaker say that there's 1 million people in Saskatchewan. So it's even more of a problem for us, the debt that nuclear has put us into. And it loses money every year, our reactor, because of the unscheduled downtime. That's the biggest draw on the bottom line. You know, so the reason that the utility or that the provinces are interested is to keep the nuclear industry going. I can understand that in New Brunswick. We've invested heavily into it. They do not want a downturn, certainly in Ontario. But Saskatchewan has an opportunity to not go there. So you're in a great situation, I would say.
Well, we've already poured our money into carbon capture and storage, so that we're paying for that on our bills still here in Saskatchewan. Another form of electrical generation that had huge downtime and massive cost to Saskatchewan ratepayers. We have lots of people, Susan, who want to join the conversation and take advantage of your expertise. So if you don't mind, we'll dive back into the phone lines now and let Frank join the conversation from Saskatoon. Hi, Frank.
Hello. I think everyone should be aware of the book by Samuel Gladstone on the source book of atomic energy. And if you read that, you'll realize there's no future, even though he is proposing it. The problem is that uranium, like the only fissionable uranium is uranium-235, and then there's like 140 times more uranium-238, and you have to separate them. And then in the future, when they run out of the 235, the only way they can make a reactor run is by building another breeder reactor that would turn 238 into plutonium, which is one of the most toxic and dangerous materials which you could make an atomic bomb with. So in the long run, they will even run out of that, and then you will end up with no fertile material left to build even the plutonium. So you will just end up with a bunch of waste products and a toxic epitaph.
Okay, Frank. Thank you, Frank.
Okay. All right.
That's Frank on the line from Saskatoon. Let's bring James into the conversation also from Saskatoon.
Good afternoon, Stephanie. Yeah, you know, I look at a few other factors. When we talk about people's comfort with living around a nuclear reactor, I think the residents in Saskatoon have been quite comfortable living around the nuclear reactor. Now, the reason I say this is in Saskatoon, we've had the slow poke reactor on the grounds of the University of Saskatchewan for quite a few years, since 1983. And so, it, you know, at times I think, unfortunately, people do get bewildered by the scary story more than anything else. It, just like anything else, science and technology does advance, and I believe that there are processes that allow us to have more comfort around this. Clearly, we see that there are different designs that are coming forward, and there seems to be the opportunity to be sure. Nothing has been truly produced yet of any great substance, but I do think that there, when the public looks at this kind of generally, I think what they're reminded of is in the United States Navy, they use the Trident submarines and the Trident energy system. That's a nuclear system that is, I think, functioning in no fewer than 18 different ships or water vessels. And they don't seem to have major problems as well. So I would even be encouraging my government to have a nuclear facility here in Saskatoon. I think we do have the South Saskatchewan River, and further to that, we already have some a small pipeline from the North Saskatchewan to Saskatoon that I think could augment when water is necessary from a different source. But I think the other positive aspect is the potential for SMRs to also produce as a byproduct hydrogen, right? And so when I look at this, it's like anything else, right? We need to work with the product to develop the product. Is it, do I want my government to go solely nuclear? No, I do not. In fact, I think there's even a place for coal in the conversation. And the reason I say that is, you know, even when we look at the German experience as it is right now, you know, they clearly had a path and that they were going to be the greenest country on the earth. And now all of a sudden, because of geopolitical events that they should have foreseen, they are now loading up on coal like nobody's business. So I think what is prudent is obviously a mix of power sources. In Saskatchewan, we're blessed to have coal. We're blessed to have hydro. We're blessed to have nuclear in the ground that we should be utilizing and harvesting in a prudent manner, right? I think I come from the same town that Sylvia Fedora came from. And I think that when I see a brilliant mind work on a problem, there's incredible solutions that come forward, right?
Okay, yeah.
But if I am fearful of everything, it creates problems into itself, right?
Well, so let's ask Susan what she thinks, James.
Please, Susan.
Sure, yeah. Well, I think your caller made some interesting points. I just want to touch on a couple of them because I often hear people say, well, you know, we already have these small reactors in submarines, et cetera. There's a huge difference between military and civilian reactors, and this is really a crucial point. It's the kind of fuel that they use, and that brings it back to the previous caller and concerns about plutonium. So in military vessels, like submarines and aircraft carriers, et cetera, they can use what's called highly enriched fuel. And basically, it's the kind of fuel that you can actually make nuclear bombs out of, and you can only use them in military environments. And if we were to use a nuclear reactor that's made for a military operation, like a submarine, and put it in a civilian context, we'd have to build a military base around it to guard the fuel, basically. And so they're completely different. And also nuclear reactors for submarines are built for propulsion. They're built for a different purpose. What we're talking about, it's not like we have the technology right now. I mentioned the NuScale design that they've spent $1 billion reaching engineered designs. They've been at it for 15 years, Stephanie. 15 years to get to the design stage, and they finally got approval to build. These are such novel technologies that are being proposed. What we have in Canada is called CANDU reactors that operate on an entirely different kind of fuel. It's natural uranium from Saskatchewan. None of the new reactors proposed are proposing to use Saskatchewan uranium. Let's be really clear about that. They're all proposing to use enriched fuel that will come from outside of Canada because we don't have an enrichment plant here. And so they're very, very different. The designs are different, and they're going to take a long time to realize if they can build them, if they can get them to work. We're not talking a decade. We're talking about more than that. And the issue is we're in a climate emergency right now. And, you know, just like we don't say we're going to solve world hunger by feeding everyone caviar, why would you take the most expensive way to produce electricity, which is nuclear power, and say this is how we're going to solve the climate crisis when the technology does not exist now, and we have proven technologies like wind and solar that we know what they're intermittent. The thing with nuclear power is, you know, the problem, say, with the Lepreau reactor here in New Brunswick, it keeps going down at unpredictable times. It's gone down. We've never had wind that doesn't blow, sun that doesn't shine in New Brunswick for weeks on end, but our reactor here has been down that amount of time. That's, and so it's not reliable.
That's
and,
good perspective. You know, we can,
yeah. And so, I mean, we have the technology now to do the transition, the energy transition that we need to do. And so why wait for the most expensive kind of technology that's not even built yet and may never work? This is where we're at right now.
Okay, we just have a few minutes left, and Vicky's been waiting patiently on the line in Saskatoon. Vicky, good afternoon.
Hi. I agree wholeheartedly with what Susan has made the case. We have the technology now. We can transition energy workers into solar and wind and safe forms of energy. I'd like to speak to the health effect of radiation. Some things do not change. Germany had a major study of nuclear reactors, and they found that the closer children lived to just routine nuclear reactors, routine emissions, the higher their rates of leukemia were. I used to live around Bruce Power. I know that there were tritium spikes. A spike means, and there were no announcements to the public about when that spike might happen. There are birth defects. There are higher rates of cancer. All these things, sadly, are anecdotal. You only know by talking to people because, sadly, the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission has refused to do larger scale health studies of population. It's really been a battle, but the higher health risks are definitely there. So why would we do that? Why would we endanger our drinking water, a really beautiful setting? We can create really good jobs and transition our energy workers into all kinds of solar and wind jobs. Joe Biden and the states are putting billions of dollars into this. And even now, there's hundreds of thousands of new energy workers. So I think it's unnecessary and it's unsafe.
Thanks, Vicky. That's Vicki on the line from Saskatoon. Susan, we will have to end our conversation in just about a minute from now. What do you think the future will be for SMRs in your province and mine?
Well, I just hope there's a lot of public debate, and I do have to applaud the fact that you seem to be on the road of open public debate in Saskatchewan, and unfortunately, that's one of the things that's missing here in New Brunswick. In fact, our legislature was just about to hold some public hearings on SMRs, and they got cancelled at the last minute, and we don't know why. But I suspect it's because I think they realize that once people are well informed about the facts about SMRs, they will not be in favor of them. And so I do hope, I wish you good luck in Saskatchewan and wish us luck here in New Brunswick.
And thank you for making time for us, Susan. That's Susan O'Donnell, an adjunct professor at the University of New Brunswick and St. Thomas University. She's also with the Coalition for Responsible Energy Development. I'm Stephanie Langenegger with you today only on Blue Sky. The program will be back tomorrow to talk about the Trans-Canada Highway 16.